Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Gaberi, and this is the podcast for entrepreneurs who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. Many entrepreneurs see time as a luxurious asset, which they never seem to have enough of. These entrepreneurs set many goals, but other things always get in the way. To become better at our craft and accomplish our goals, we need to stop complaining about a lack of time and start making time work for us. That will be the focus of this episode of the Breakthrough Success Podcast. Today's guest speaks 45 times a year, either on the main stage teaching his Think, Plan, Act model, or for one of his three workshops. He's been selected to speak by companies like TELUS, Royal Bank of Canada, Fortis, and many more. He is the Canadian best-selling author of the book, Give Me a Break, The Art of Making Time Work for You. Today's guest for episode 105 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Hugh Culver. Hugh, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, Mark, thanks. I'm a big fan of your work, and so I'm excited to be here.
Hugh, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show, and this is such an important topic for entrepreneurs, which is why I'm really excited to dive in. But I'd love to get some backstory, some idea of what got you on this path. So why did you write the book, Give Me a Break?
Sure. So I started out in business as a young guy, as a river guide, actually. So I live in Western Canada, and my brother and I had a rafting company, which was the largest in Western Canada. And then we had a sailing company, which was the largest ecotourism company. We sold that. I started a company in Antarctica where I was buying airplanes, flying people to the South Pole. And every career I went on sort of went down that path. Started something small. It became really big. I ended up with 35 employees in both of those companies. And so when I went into this newest version of my career, which is teaching and speaking on stage, I realized that I had some really bad habits. And so I realized that, you know, even though I was reading all the right books, I wasn't doing the right stuff. And so that's why I wrote the book, because I wanted to go through the process, Mark, of figuring out, well, what is it that works for me? And if it works for me, my guess is it'll work for similar types of people. So entrepreneurs who have lots of creative ideas, but were really lacking in discipline.
And I find it interesting that you mentioned that you were reading the right books, but you still didn't have the right habits. And I'm wondering why you think we have such a, and it's not just you, it's a lot of people. They'll read a book and they will forget about it later, but they'll feel good about reading it. So can you share with us any ideas for implementing what we read so we get a better experience out of each book?
Yeah, that's a great question to start with. So there's no end of time management or productivity or books on procrastination. There's just loads of them, and they all have little gems within them. At the same time, people go into entrepreneurship because they're optimists, because they're creative. And in fact, they actually, basically, they honor their creativity. It's a source of pride for them. And so what I hear a lot of entrepreneurs say to me is, if I did this, it would really stifle me. I'm not the kind of person that is going to spend time understanding how software works. I want to write the book. I just don't want to go through the process of having to go through 100 steps to get to the book, to the end result. So every book you read, my solution, my strategy is I sit down with, I'm going to read a book. First of all, I want to finish it in one night or two nights at the most. If it takes me longer than a couple of nights, I'm probably not going to get any value out of it. I'm probably reading too slowly. I'm just going to get lost in all of the little bits of details. The second thing is I have beside me either my iPad or a 4x6 index card. And my job is before I finish the book is I've written down a few things that actually make sense to me. Because every book, again, whether it's time management or productivity or how to use your email more efficiently, is written from the author's perspective. And so it's going to work great for that author, but it's not going to always work great for us. We need to pull out a couple of key things that are going to make sense in our world, that is going to allow us to still be really creative, to allow us to still be a little bit of, you know, distracted once in a while. But these are things that are going to work in our world and help us just to be a little bit more effective. And I think a lot of times what time management training and books try to do is to make us into little mechanical robots where we're spending a lot of time filling in special lists and the wheel of our day and calculating percentage of hours. And that's not how entrepreneurs work. So go get the great, there's great content out there. My book is excellent. And you need to have an index card or your iPad or something beside it and just pull out the parts that are going to work for you. And that's how you can actually become more effective.
I do like that index card idea. And I mean, underlining in books is definitely better than not underlining at all, but you have to go through all the pages to retrace your steps, and that index card can definitely help you a lot more. And one of the things that I also feel like is a common thread that many of us entrepreneurs share is that we feel like time's against us. We're always working against the clock. We have to get X, Y, and Z done. We only have this many hours to do it. So can you talk a little bit about why you believe most people feel like time is against them and how we can correct that?
Sure. Well, let me give you a great example. So this morning, it's my first day officially back in my office after the new year, and I started to look at my flight plan. And my flight plan is described in my book. Essentially, it's something I learned in Antarctica from one of my pilots, and that is the way that pilots plan their route is obviously they have a goal of where they want to land, but what they do is they map out how they're going to get there before they leave ground. So there I was looking at my flight plan. What do I want to accomplish this week? I'm making my list for the day, Mark. Next thing you know, I had 3/4 of a piece of paper filled up with a list for today. So that's a mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs make, is they overestimate how much they can get done in a day. So I threw away that piece of paper and I started again. And now I would say I've got in front of me eight things that I've got to get done today. So the first thing is avoid overestimating how much you can get done in a day. And what's more important is to choose a few things that are going to really make you money at the end of the week or the end of the month or the end of the year. And so leave those. Here's the trick: is you have to have a place to park the things that are just trivial little details. So that's where my flight plan process comes in. It's very simple. My flight plan is the top of the page or in Evernote or Word document is what am I going to get done this week? And then below that is what am I going to get done this month? And then below that is someday. And the someday is just a holding pot. So what am I going to get done this week? That's called the flight plan. What am I going to get done this month? So if you're listening to this in February, it would be entitled February. And then someday is a holding pot. So a great book to read, a website to look at, an online course to check out. That's the someday. So the first thing is don't overestimate how much you can get done in a day. The second thing is you need to have a place to park all of these ideas. So that's my flight plan model. The third thing is entrepreneurs need to understand, this is so simple, they need to understand that not all time is not equal. So what you can get done at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. is very different than what you can get done at 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. But somehow in our mind, we think that 7 a.m. or 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. is the same as 3 p.m. or 7 p.m. And it's absolutely not. And I can absolutely guarantee you that as you get older, it's going to become even more obvious. So what entrepreneurs need to understand is when is their peak times. So some people are fantastic at night. They are just like killer at night. They, as far as generating content, for example, so working on their online course, their new book, some content upgrade, their blog post, even a client proposal. Great. So you need to schedule that kind of work for nighttime. For me, I'm hopeless at night. What I need to do is do all of that first thing in the morning. So don't overestimate how much you can get done in a day. Have a place to park all sorts of miscellaneous things, especially in an order that's prioritized. And then the third thing is understand that you need to do the hardest work when you are in your peak hours, and then do the easy work when you are in those non-peak hours. And just put those three things together, and that would be a huge improvement for most of the people that certainly that I come in contact with.
One of those insights that you gave us is something that I haven't heard for, like, I don't know if I heard it a long time ago or never, but having that someday, like, I feel like if we set a goal and we don't get it done within our time frame, we may set it one more time, but then just give up on that goal. But someday allows us to lay out all the things that we should be doing at a certain time. Like, it's not as definite, like, if you miss the goal. It's not like you give up on the goal. You just put it in someday if it's still something that you want to pursue. And one of the things that is also great for us to accomplish our goals, whether it be the immediate ones, the monthly goals, and even those someday goals, is to create systems that help us with our work. This is a topic that you talk about a little bit in your book. So how can we create systems that allow us to better utilize the time that we have?
Nice. Thanks, Mark. So the first system that I work with is boundaries. And so a boundary is kind of what I was just mentioning. For example, I have boundaries around my peak hours. So a boundary of time is when I am strategically unavailable. So I have designed it so I am strategically unavailable. Now, my first boundary in the day is from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. Now, that's not going to obviously work for everybody, but because I generate so much written content, so I do a lot of guest blog posts, I write my own blog post. I have three different companies I'm running, and so two of those have blogs. And I also write client proposals. I have 8 people that are employed in my businesses right now. So I have to write content that they can use for their work. So that's 5 to 7 in the morning. My second boundary is when I first get to my office, which is outside of my house, is what I'm going to get done before 10:30 in the morning, because I know that that's another really fantastic peak period for me to get done hard work. So those are boundaries. So a boundary is a chunk of time that repeats every day or certain days of the week when I'm strategically unavailable. And you'll hear some people will say, well, different days of the week, I do different tasks. So one day is for relationships, one day is for creative, et cetera. I prefer to actually not do it that way. I do it during the day. So that's what a boundary is for. So that's a system that you can put in place. And the trick here is get off the internet. Don't be getting distracted. Don't be following little rabbit trails. During that boundary of time, you should be looking at your flight plan. You should be working on a couple of projects that are going to really move the needle. Because here's the thing, Mark, is that at the end of the week, you know, there should be this sense that, okay, I got a little distracted. I procrastinated a little bit, but I moved the needle. Like, I actually moved forward on major projects that are going to actually make a difference. You know, we live in a world now which is so different than what our parents lived in or our grandparents lived in. And it is super easy to get distracted with low value stuff. I mean, you know, all you need to do is, you know, open up the internet and check your email and suddenly on rabbit trails. So the whole idea is a boundary of time is when I'm going to work on things that really make a difference.
And I love that idea of setting those times where you can't be disturbed and it's all work mode. Obviously, those times are different for each person, but you mentioned staying in that routine and developing it into that habit, but at the same time, not getting into those rabbit holes. And I feel like it's so easy for us to fall into them, whether it be checking email or you see like a rising thing. Like, I feel like Bitcoin got a lot of people's attention in 2017. You also have, like, I was on Amazon just like a few weeks ago as of this recording. And I saw a book about making it as an Amazon associate. Now, I didn't go down that rabbit hole, but I know me from like, oh, 2 or 3 years ago, would have been really deep into that rabbit hole. So how do you recommend maintaining that level of focus during the critical hours of the day without jumping into so many rabbit holes where you're trying to like make money with like 50 different or 100 different
Totally. Things? Yeah, exactly. And the Amazon associate thing is a great example. I mean, here's one thing that, so I, as a part of my system, Mark. So when I am writing, I don't do any spell checking and I don't do any fact checking. So what my little system is that when I'm writing a blog or I'm working on my next book right now, is I just put in square brackets with a little note to myself. So anytime I see square brackets, it means there's something that I need to look up. So as I'm writing away, I think, oh, I wonder if I can find a quote or an example of that. Square brackets, and I move on. And so the reason I do that is because I know that if I go over and start searching for that, I'm now going to be lost in Wiki and I'm going to be on YouTube and I'm never going to get the thing done. The second thing that I think people need to understand, and this is especially true for entrepreneurs who do not have a regular 9-to-5 routine that they have to stick to, is they need to understand that the story that they make up in their mind is mostly nonsense. And that story is, I have all the time in the world, or I can get to that later. And it's nonsense because what happens then is everything that's important gets pushed off to easier distractions. It's called the path of least resistance. And the path of least resistance is going to be work that you are going to get done, and maybe you get a little bit of a dopamine rush, but it's not going to actually move the needle. And so when I work with people, I really encourage them to start thinking about, make it the day before vacation. So the day before vacation is, it is like, I am just going to be decisive. I am not going to mess around with tiny stuff. Anything that's small, I will move to later, but I am going to get done the hardest work because it's the day before vacation. I don't want to be looking at this tomorrow. And so it's the idea is to come in, organize with your boundaries already set. You got your flight plan in place. You know what you got to get done for the week. And you're going to really act as if it's the day before vacation. You're going to really act as if I have to get this stuff done because it's the only way that I'm actually going to, you know, create real results by the end of the week. And what happens then is if you can start getting into that routine of, okay, I plan ahead, I work really diligently. Sure, there's time to get distracted. Like outside of my, you know, high value boundary time, I can get distracted like anybody else. But at the end of the week, because I'm using that system of flight plan and boundaries, I'm actually going to be a lot more productive than most people.
Hugh, thank you for sharing those great insights with us. And I love that idea of making it as if every day is a vacation. And
Day before vacation.
Day before.
Not the vacation. It's the day before vacation.
I tried to say like the day of. It definitely came out wrong for that. But in any event, like the day before the vacation, that's a really powerful mindset. I definitely feel it when it's actually the day before vacation. I'll definitely be doing that more often where I think of it as the day before the vacation when I need to get something done. And one of the things that helps us get things done are habits. And you share different habits that people can use to up-level their game. And in fact, I know you wrote a free guide called Hero Habits. For anyone wondering, you can find that at hughculver.com. But with that in mind, with all the habits that we could possibly develop, what are some of the daily habits that we should be developing on the road to success?
Yeah, that's great. Well, I am a huge fan of habits. And so I'm going to give you a couple of examples of habits that I think are super important for entrepreneurs. And before I do that, I just want to sort of step back and talk about why habits I think are so exciting. Entrepreneurs need to build discipline. Discipline comes from willpower, and willpower is built through habits. So entrepreneurs need discipline because they are the boss. They're the only ones they're going to be accountable to. They're going to either make it or break it based on what they get done. And the only way to have discipline is you got to have willpower. And willpower is my ability to get stuff done, even though it's uncomfortable, even though when I look at it, I think, oh, you know, I don't really like doing that. You know, in my case, because we have a really cool social media service, which is currently called SOS. So we have clients in 5 different countries, and we do their social media for them. And sometimes I have to reach out to them, and I have to resolve problems, or I have to actually, you know, basically ask them for the sale. And so discipline, it takes discipline for me to do that. So then how do I get more discipline? It's through habits, because every time I exercise a habit, basically subconsciously, I am proving to myself that I overcame something and did it. A simple example is every time you floss your teeth, It's you overcoming resistance about flossing your teeth. Every time you go for a run, it's you overcoming resistance. And that habit builds the willpower, which gives you the discipline. So it's like the fuel for discipline is habits. So great habits for entrepreneurs to be looking at. Definitely the first one would be a planning habit, like understanding that you're going to feel less stress. You are going to be more successful if you spend a few minutes on a Sunday evening or a Monday morning and decide what you need to get done by Friday. That would be the first habit, is get into a planning habit. The second thing I would really encourage entrepreneurs to look at is a habit around fitness and exercise, because we are the engine that's going to actually get the work done. And so, you know, whether it's 10 minutes a day or 20 minutes a day, you need to understand how exercise works. And exercise is not about just standing up and moving. Exercise is about getting your heart rate up and having stress. And you have to have both of those throughout the week. And so I don't care if you do it through, you know, hot yoga or lifting weights or going for a run or doing hill climbs, but you know, you have to find a way to get your heart rate up and create stress on the body. It's the whole hunt and hibernate cycle that our body is designed around. So first thing is have a habit around planning, have a habit around exercise. So you're going to have the energy, you're going to feel good about yourself. You're going to actually feel like you're not neglecting yourself. You're not going to resent your business. And then maybe the third habit I would say, Mark, is have a habit around turning everything off, because I think that whatever age you're at or whatever level of complexity you have, whether you have kids or don't have kids and all that sort of stuff, you know, there has to be a time in the day when you just chill out. And so for me, that's reading novels, maybe watching a show at night. I like doing, I play guitar or drawing, but I think every entrepreneur has to have a time when they can actually refresh. It's like hitting a refresh on your computer. So there'd be three habits I would start with.
Hugh, thank you for sharing with us those great habit recommendations, because I mean, habits, the ones that we choose will either make or break us. So it's very important to adopt the habits that are going to lead towards our success. And part of becoming successful means tapping into our full potential. And when we do hit that mark, it just moves to a different location, then we have to hit that mark again. But what do you believe holds most people back from reaching their full potential?
Wow. Well, there's a lot of things. A big thing is self-doubt. So not believing that they are worthy of achieving more. So a good example is in the speaking world. So I've been a speaker now for over 20 years, and most speakers that come to me for advice are far too modest about their abilities. They're far too shy about charging enough money. And when they actually do get an opportunity to speak to an audience, they're far too reluctant to ask for something else. So they're far too reluctant to ask the audience to buy their book or to hire them for another speech. And it just is this kind of, you know, it's completely natural. And of course, it's very nice that, you know, people are humble, and maybe we Canadians are more so than other countries in the world. But the reality is that if you have any kind of a solution that is going to save people some pain, or time, then that's worth charging money for. So any kind of a solution that saves people pain or time, whether that's an online course or your speech or a blog post or coaching advice you deliver through Skype or on the phone, that's worth charging money for. And the reality is, and everybody finds this as a huge surprise, Mark, as you probably have seen, you know, later in their career, they double their prices and they get more business. And it's not necessarily more volume, but they're going to get more revenues. And so I would say that what holds people back is they don't understand the real value that they can bring. And then secondly, I think a big problem is they don't make the effort to actually package themselves so that they as a commodity are, you know, that the value is obvious. Like they don't spend time to actually craft a package so that people look at it and they say, wow, I have definitely, you know, this is what I'm looking for. The solution is obvious. So I'd say those are two things I would start with.
And just to double down on that point, there are some people who charge $100 an hour for consulting, other people who charge $1,000 per hour for consulting. And that person who charges $1,000 per hour one client $1,000, but the person who charges $100 per hour has to get 10 clients, commit 10 hours to get the same revenue as you would get from offering the premium price and just doing that 1 hour. So even if you get fewer customers by charging higher, that's also more time for you to do other things like grow your brand and look for even more customers.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And, you know, we've all been there. And certainly when I stuck up, you know, my sign and said, hey, I'll coach speakers, I started out and it was very low. I mean, I was charging very little for a year of coaching. And now, you know, I charge the same amount in 3 months that I used to charge for a year of coaching. But you have to kind of earn that. You have to earn the ability to charge those kind of amounts. But I do think that if entrepreneurs listening to this, just start to realize, look, you know, you have something that's going to reduce pain or save people time. That's worth a lot of money. And now what you need to do is you need to package it so people see it as a real obvious value that they can actually see themselves working with you. And then, as you said, Mark, I think there needs to be an opportunity for that premium product. You know, when we sold I have a program called the Business of Speaking School. It's an 8-week course. I run it once a year. And this year, or 2017, we added in a premium coaching package. And that premium coaching package brought in the same amount of revenues as the entire course did for all the other students. So we need to understand that there's always going to be a percentage of people who will pay a premium to have more of what you have to offer.
And there are definitely that group of people. I mean, it's easier to find them when we have the product or service in place and we're able to offer, but you only know if you actually take the initiative to offer that premium product or service, who is willing to take you up on that offer. And I like to shift gears a little bit towards another universal truth about entrepreneurs, and that is we all have certain challenges that we're going to have to face as we go through our journey. Some people bigger than others, but challenges all the same. So, Hugh, I wonder if you could share with us one big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Wow. Okay. So the one that has been repeating itself through every business that I've started, Mark, has been, I would say, it's not about so much being a control freak, although I probably am a control freak. It's the belief that I can do something the best, that I'm the best at doing something. And so I have this tendency to start up a project and then think that I'm the only one that knows how to write up the outline for the course, or I'm the only one that knows how to shoot the videos, or I'm the only one that knows how to create all the slides. And what happens then is that, sure, the product might be really good quality, but what happens is I now have another huge project sitting on my plate when I already had a full plate. And as soon as I started to understand, and I'm constantly struggling with this, but as soon as I started to understand that there are other people that are much better at certain skills than me, but also the fact that I can get things off my plate means I can move up to a higher level of performance, a higher level of wealth, a higher level of impact. Once I started to recognize that and giving the responsibility away, everything shifted. And I started to be able to change my view in terms of what I needed to work on. I started to be able to create better and bigger results. And also, I just became a lot less frustrated in terms of the details. And so, like most entrepreneurs, I don't really love details. I mean, I'm capable, but I don't love details. What I love is the creating and the starting part. So my point is that what I learned was, as soon as possible, and some people will even say before you even are ready, bring people onto your team who have the potential to take a problem off your hands. And I say have a potential because they may not be ready there. They may not be, you know, ready now, but they have the potential to learn and to move into that role. As soon as you can, bring someone onto your team, get out of the weeds and get into big picture thinking.
I absolutely love that advice of starting before you're ready. That's similar to the idea of ready, fire, and then aim. But That's similar with my approach with building my team. I hire people before I feel like I'm ready, and then having that additional expense inspires me to put in more work, because you realize, hey, you're paying for this person's food on the table. So it's kind of like the team becomes your family when you're with them long enough. So hiring before you're ready will definitely give you. Now, I don't recommend doing this on a large scale. I only did this with one employee who was part-time in the beginning, but I would recommend doing things before you think you're fully ready, and then the action is just going to really ignite.
Very much. You know, it's kind of funny if I look at, for example, in the speaking business, or people that are selling online courses, or people that are putting on events, Mark, they want to be charging really, you know, decent dollars for their event. So a $2,000 course is not unusual anymore. A $500 event is not unusual anymore. To be charging $250 to $500 an hour for coaching is not unusual. And at the same time, they're not willing to hire someone for $18 or $22 an hour to take care of a lot of trivial, meaningless, repetitive, you know, type of work. And so it's kind of ironic that they want to charge the big dollars and they aren't willing, though, to, you know, basically bring someone on the team to take care of the small stuff.
And it you could do it on your own, but you'll free up so much of your time. And by doing that, you focus more on your priorities and the important decisions you have to make within your business. And a lot of this interview has focused on your book, Give Me a Break. But in addition to your book, I'm wondering if you could share with us three great books that would help us on the road to success.
Okay, so great. Well, fortunately, I'm a big reader, so there's a couple that I would definitely recommend. So the first one that comes to mind, it's already been mentioned, I think, on your podcast a couple times, is Gary Keller and Jay Papasan's The One Thing.
That's
so Gary Keller and Jay Papasan, The One Thing. I would actually read The One Thing every year. I think it's just a super fast read. It's fun to read. It's illustrated. There's great stories. And, you know, Gary Keller is an incredibly credible guy in terms of building up this huge real estate empire. So that would be one. I'm rereading Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, classic, which is just super fun because you just got to love the language, you know,
when you're reading something. It's great, but you got to interpret it a little bit.
It is fun, though. It's like reading a parable from the Bible or something, but Think and Grow Rich is fun. So I'm reading a chapter a day right now to go through that one. And let's see, another one that I would recommend that I've, I certainly am a big fan of learning how to write better, because I do think it influences everything that you do. And so I'm going to throw in Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott. And Lammott, Anne Lamott, and Bird by Bird, which is just a fantastic book to read if you're really trying to become a better writer. And I would argue that includes emails and it includes client proposals. Yes. And, you know, I find that, like, I was just sending out a bunch of emails this morning, Mark, catching up with some clients that I'm going to be working with. And, you know, just throwing in a little bit of stuff about the weather or some little tidbits and doing it in a creative way, I think it just makes you more human, and it develops a trust relationship. And anyways, Bird by Bird, it's a super fun read. She's an amazing writer. She has earned a huge following, and that's a great place to start to become a better writer.
Hugh, thank you for sharing with us those three great book recommendations. And before we wrap up the show, I'm going to flip the tables on you a little bit. So I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what is one question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Wow. Well, the thing that comes to mind, Mark, is legacy. So I would say, I think what we all need to be asking ourselves, and I don't mean this in a sort of a morose, the world is coming to an end type perspective, but I just think in terms of what are you actually creating that is going to be your legacy. And I think that it could be as simple as just really being an incredibly generous person who is helping people, like you're doing with your podcast. You know, everybody knows, you know, if they, everybody should know that podcasts don't make you money. You know, they sure you can eventually maybe sell advertising, but podcasts are a very generous act and a huge amount of work. So what are you doing to create legacy? So in my case, I'm building a business that actually employs people, and I'm really excited about what we're doing, because we're going to have employees all over North America within 3 years that are working for bloggers all over North America. And I think it's really exciting. And we also get to hire people who are not physically capable of getting other kinds of work. And so to me, that's just an exciting legacy. I think that, you know, my books, I'm writing my second book right now, and I'll have a third book in the way soon. And those are, you know, pieces of legacy. So, you know, a lot of people talk about, you want to have money while you sleep and, you know, earn income, passive income. And that stuff, I think, is great. But I think what's more important is how you can actually impact people, and in a way that you're doing it just genuinely because you want to do it. So whether that's building up a tribe where you actually serve them through your information, or by creating a connection between them, or it's creating products that serve an audience, I think those are forms of a legacy. And as soon as you can, looking at how you can also support a bigger cause. So can you reach out and do something where you're helping the less fortunate?
Hugh, thank you for giving us that powerful question about legacy. I know some podcasters do generate revenue from their efforts, but regardless, it is a very hard road for any type of venture that you pursue, ads being the way to make revenue from the show. But it's amazing all the insights that you provided to us in this episode. I mean, as a host, like, it's amazing to just constantly sit through and hear all these awesome insights, like, every single week from so many awesome guests like yourself. Mm-hmm. And for listeners, if you want to learn more about Hugh and follow up with him after this episode, head over to hughculver.com. And don't forget to pick up the free guide, Hero Habits, that's on the site. And also get his book, Give Me a Break, which is on places like Amazon. Hugh, I can't thank you enough for stopping by. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, this has been my pleasure. I love the work you're doing, and I'm super impressed by how quickly you've developed a following and the quality of your work. So it was a real pleasure for me to be here.
It was a pleasure to have you on the show.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgberti.com/retweets.